Now the story of frontline sales reps scrapping to learn new skills and build their careers. It's Arrested Sales Development with Max and Ben.
Hello, this is Ben Tannenbaum.
This is Max Emmerman.
And we're really excited to bring you the first real episode of Arrested Sales Development. Tonight's topic actually should hopefully be worthwhile for any sort of entry-level salespeople that have ever thought about, like, why is this worthwhile? Why am I putting up with being an SDR? Nobody ever really dreams of being an SDR or an entry-level sales rep. You don't dress up as Halloween or anything like that. So we still do think it's a worthwhile job to have early in your career. There's a lot of benefit, and you're going to gain a lot from doing sales early on in your career. So we'll talk about that tonight.
Yeah, so, you know, just start, Ben, why did you become an SDR? You know, short answer, just, you know.
So my first job out of college was doing consulting, like a lot of people, and I liked aspects of it. It was a good experience, and I liked the people a lot, certainly. Something I wanted to do in sales, though, was A, just learn more about technology, because we work for a technology company, and B, sort of everything you're doing really winds up being sales at some point down the road, be it a lawyer trying to get business or a marketing executive trying to get new clients for your company. So if you're going to have to do sales at some point down the road in your career, may as well learn how to do it in real life, actually doing sales from the get-go.
No, that's actually really interesting. I had a very different experience of how I got into sales. So after college, I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. Went to go teach English in a foreign country. Found out that a lot of those skills actually translated directly to sales. So that's how I found it. You know, enough about us. Let's actually move into some helpful, you know, tips, tricks, language of the SDR, so to speak.
Sure, yeah. So when we were talking beforehand, we sort of broke it down into hard skills and soft skills that being an SDR are going to teach you. So, Max, what would you say are some of the most important hard skills that you get out of being an SDR?
Yeah, you know, so for my position, which is the sales development specialist, you know, inbound sales, I think the most important traits or hard skills to have in that position are product knowledge and CRM knowledge. You know, those two things you use, well, daily in your tasks, you know, accomplishing really anything you're going to do. But the product knowledge specifically is very interesting. One, learning about the company you work for, but also learning about the product can be hard and it takes time. But there's a very big difference between speaking about the product over email versus, you know, actually over the phone. And that's what I struggled with the most as in, you know, SDS or inbound sales. It was really conveying the knowledge that I had outwards, meaning actually just talking about our products. You know, being a tech company, I'm not a tech-oriented person. It took a long time to learn the, you know, the lingo, the keywords, all that. But once you learn all that, it gets a lot easier.
Oh, right. When you're talking to people all day about something, you have to learn about it pretty quickly.
Exactly.
I think another hard skill, too, is you don't think of sales being a math-oriented job, but to do it right, you really have to know your numbers. And that's a cliche, but it's true. I have to know I'm reaching out to X number of phone calls a day to hit up Y number of accounts a day if I'm going to book the number of meetings that I need to book as an SDR. It's important to do those calculations, to know those calculations, and to use those numbers in a business setting actually does require some sort of math skills.
Yeah, it's definitely a very fair point. You know, in my role, I don't think it's used as much, but I think for any outbound SDR, that's a really valid point that you should take consideration of. Another just category we had of skills, you know, to use in SDR, why be an SDR kind of stuff, is the soft skills, you know, versus hard.
And I think the soft skills are probably more important. That's going to be what you get out of this role.
Agreed. You know, as I said, coming from an education background, especially in a foreign country, I never realized that my previously learned soft skills could actually translate to sales so well. For instance, one of those quote-unquote soft skills that I think I learned really well while being a teacher was organization. So, you know, as teaching in this foreign country, I had to, one, prepare my time, but also prepare my lesson plans. So I had to block out basically every hour of my day, figuring out when I would do what class, what student would get help, you know, what homework they would get, what level of English language I was going to teach that day. All these questions came into how am I going to plan that out over, one, the daily, but two, the yearly plan, and how do I make it work so each kid learns. those skills directly translated back to my job now, which is developing a cadence with my prospects. So having, you know, email versus phone versus email, figuring out when to call them, when is the best time to email versus call, you know, when should I be setting up a meeting versus waiting a second to learn more information. Those kinds of skills directly translated from my old job. Never thought that would have been the case.
And Max, I think that's a really good point about organization. I remember even when you interviewed here, and one of your questions was, what's the number one trait you're going to need as an SDR to succeed? And my answer was organization. Because I think if you're disorganized, you're not going to do a good job as an SDR. You can't. You can't keep track of who you're reaching out to, when you're reaching out to them, what you're going to say to them, all sorts of different buyer personas and messagings and timelines. You can't do it if you're not very organized and regimented.
100% agreed. Ben, what do you think is one of your, I guess, top soft skills, or what do you think resonates most with you?
So I think one benefit that you're going to get out of being an SDR early in your career from a soft skill perspective is learning how to put up with the grind of the job and being resilient. You're on the phone all the time talking to people that don't want to talk to you. You're getting told no all the time. You're getting rejected all the time. And it's easy to burn out. It's easy to take that personally. It's easy to lose your sort of morale and self-esteem. So to be able to put up with that is one of the hardest things you're going to have to do. So once you can get over that hump, I think you're going to be fine in your long-term career. What about you, Max? I mean, it's a little bit different for you doing inbounds because there's that clear-cut rejection per se, but you still have to be resilient and put up with a lot of crazies dealing with them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being the quote-unquote gatekeeper to the organization definitely comes with perks, but also, you know, negatives. You know, for example, I'm on the phone all day because crazies call our office. But that's how it works.
Always super nice to you.
Yeah, exactly. And they're always not nice. I would say that for me, you know, behind an organization, your communication skills are really what matters in an SDS or inbound specific role. And what I mean by communication is not just, you know, communicating within your team and making sure that your voice is heard, but actually communicating within your department, but also between departments. What I found was a part of my role, which was not previously described to me in my company, was really learning how to communicate between different teams and the different departments. So, you know, like we said, we're a tech company, and a lot of the times, you know, the tech and the sales wings of the company are, you know, they're in the communication, but it's at a very high level, right? So it's all of, you know, it's the senior leaders who are communicating. It's not the, you know, workers on the ground, so to speak. So it's not, you know, someone who's in my position on the tech side. And keeping up with them, but also learning how to speak to them in a way that is conducive for learning on both sides, meaning knowing what, you know, certain acronyms mean on the tech side, so you don't have to ask them 1,000 times. The little things, those are what really make the difference in that kind of communication efforts.
And Max, to your point about communicating with other parts of the company, that's one reason why SDRs, not just at our company, but really in pretty much any industry, do go into non-sales careers as well. Mm-hmm. So you have to communicate with people in tech or marketing or whatever it may be. Maybe you find something that piques your interest and you explore a career in that department or that role. And because of your work in sales, you're well-equipped to do really any other job in your company or in your organization. So
I agree. That's
another reason why this is a really good place to start your career.
Yeah. As a final thought, Ben, do you have like one trait or one lesson or anything like that that you would want to share with like anyone who's listening? You know, something that really helped you early on in your career. For example, you know, something that I definitely want to share is don't be afraid of anything new to you. You know, one of the first days I started working at the company, I got sent an email chain with 20 people on it and 60 messages. I'd never seen anything like that in my life, right? So at first I saw that, you know, I got a little like schwitzy, right? I got a little bead of sweat on the forehead running down, that kind of thing. You know, I just basically took a deep breath and was like, let's read every single one of these emails, figure out why this was sent to me, figure out what the heck it is. And then, hey, if I can't figure it out, we'll talk to someone and I'll advocate for myself. You know, never be afraid of really anything that comes to your work, but also always advocate for yourself. It would be my best advice for an entry-level position.
Yeah, well, that's good advice, Max. I've never had to translate the Rosetta Stone of emails like you did on that email chain. But I guess one thing I think take away from me as an SDR sort of goes back to what I was saying with putting up with the rejection and the no's that you're going to get. Advice I got early when I was coming in as an SDR was, if they're rude to you on the phone, that's on them. They're the ones having a bad day, and they probably won't even remember it the next day. So to remind yourself that you don't really need to put up with any people being rude to you, I think is important. So just to sort of wrap things up here, those are a few reasons why I do think being an SDR is an important career. You're going to learn good soft skills, you're going to learn hard skills, and meet interesting people in your company. So just to wrap things up and conclude, I think we would like to make this interactive and engage with our audience. So if you can tweet at Arrested Sales Development or email us at arrestedsalesdevelopment@gmail.com, we'd love to hear your take on why you joined sales, what got your career started in sales, and why you think being an SDR is an important career.
Yeah, so, you know, as always, this is Max.
And this is Ben.
Thanks for listening to Arrested Sales Development. All right, so we'll start in 3, 2. Hello, and welcome back to the Arrested Sales Development Podcast. I'm your host, Max, and this is...
I'm Ben Tannenbaum.
Yep. And today we'll be interviewing Joel Arnold, who is the manager of the SDR team at PowerViews, and also the director of sales and marketing operations. So Joel's worked at a bunch of different real cool companies, but, you know, today he's with our company and doing that kind of thing. So with that being said, we're going to introduce Joel, ask me a few questions, and that'll be our podcast today.
Sure. Hey, everyone.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Joel. We're really excited to have you on.
Excited to be here.
I think one question we'd like to sort of ask you just to sort of start things off and kick this going is you were coming from a non-SDR background, really you did managing our sales ops when our team got put on your plate. What's something that you learned about managing SDRs and the SDR role that you really didn't anticipate and you really didn't know coming into the manager position?
Sure. So I think the... there's a lot of stuff that you kind of know about ahead of time. I think the one thing that probably jumped out to me as a maybe a little bit of a minor gotcha is just the emphasis on training and onboarding. We've hired up a lot of SDRs in the last, let's say, 3-4 months. And I probably spend about maybe half to 60% of the time focused on working with people that are doing the onboarding, running trainings myself, and other things like that, just to get people up to speed. So that takes up a lot more bandwidth than I was probably expecting going into this.
Sure. When you're doing that onboarding and that training, are there specific things that you notice, man, all my new hires are struggling with X skill or Y skill?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people that go into the SDR role haven't done it before. So just basic sales skills, how do you craft a message? What is a cadence? How do you run one? Those kind of things. And then also, there's a lot of tools that go along with being an SDR. So getting up to speed on all the different things that we use, from inbound, like live chat and whatnot, to sort of outbound and prospecting tools, you know, managing your cadences, tracking things. And we use Salesforce as our CRM, that kind of stuff.
How do you think you know, someone in college right now or someone looking for a job, how could they best prep to be an SDR, you know? Not even an interview, but just how to really be, I guess, from day one, be ready to, you know, start sending emails, making calls, all that kind of good stuff.
That's a hard one. I think experience in any sort of job, it doesn't have to be necessarily sales, but one that forces you or you even force yourself around maybe coursework or whatnot to be very prepared and very consistent with your approach to things. I think it's the consistency that people, you know, get really excited on a certain day of the week, and then 3 days later, you know, you're kind of bored and you don't really want to do it that day or whatever. Like, that's the stuff that really pulls you down. So making sure that, you know, you're right in your mindset and being focused about every day, coming in and giving it your best.
So I like that point about the consistency. When I'm in an SDR role, I have, like, the same schedule every single day. I'm making my phone calls at X hour. I'm sending my emails at Y time. End of the day, I'm doing more of a like research and targeting, setting up my tasks for the next day. And I think that's really important. How do you go about evaluating someone's consistency in an interview process, which is inherently not really consistent?
Sure. Yeah. It's a real quick snapshot. I think evaluating the consistency is evaluating their background in terms of what things stand out as far as work ethic is concerned. That can take a lot of forms. I mean, you could be the captain of a baseball team, or you could be a straight A student, magna cum laude, or something like that. You could go to Stanford. Like, there are a lot of things that point to somebody who has achieved excellence. And in the things that really count or are really difficult, you can't get there just on talent and kind of winging it alone. You have to have some sort of you know, work ethic and drive that goes along with that. So there's a lot of ways that you can test for that. when you're doing the interview process.
So, you know, switching gears here a little bit, you know, in your experience, you know, just you're obviously hold the position of director, you know, what is it like being prospected? You know, what are some experience you've had? What are some horror stories? You give us a little, you know, I guess a little background to that, because we're people who, you know, generally speaking, I've probably been prospected. I don't know about you, Ben, like maybe once in my career.
Yeah, it happens all day, every day. I probably get 30 or 40 emails a day around it. I actually don't have a phone at my desk, so it probably helps me avoid a lot of inbound calls. But you know, you see a lot of the same things over and over again when you're being prospected. You see a lot of techniques, a lot of stuff, even that people were doing 5-10 years ago that people are still doing now. And it's easy, your brain, even if you're not even conscious around it, will start filtering that stuff out, and you kind of just click onto the next email and go through the rest of your day. Yeah, horror stories. I mean, the one that keeps coming up is no one can get my name right. Mm. My name's Joel Arnold. But most people know Arnold as in Arnold Schwarzenegger, so first name. And then most people know Joel as, like, I don't know, Billy Joel or something. That's a last name. So everybody thinks my name's opposite of what it is.
Interesting.
So I get Arnold Joel a lot.
It's like Yao Ming, Ming Yao.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Or I was
Joe. In an email last week.
Yeah, I get Joe a lot. Just getting names wrong. I mean, it's basic stuff. It's not that hard. So if I see that, I just kind of delete and move on.
Do you ever respond to the negative ones and give them advice or no?
I've really wanted to. Mm-hmm. I never have, though.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
On the glass half full side, what piques your interest from a SDR message that you maybe take a meeting, or even if you don't take a meeting, you say, Ron Burgundy, I don't like you, but man, I respect you. What sort of draws your attention?
Yeah, I think the thing that jumps out is the stuff that sort of shatters the mold. I remember the first time I got an email sent to me that had a photo. And the person had written on a little miniature whiteboard my name and said, "Hello, Joel Arnold, can we have a chat?" Now, it doesn't take a whole lot of effort, I suppose, to put that together, but it was different, and that kind of stood out. So I, you know, definitely respect it. I didn't exactly call them back, but I definitely respected the game. You know, other things, videos, GIFs are starting to be inserted into prospecting emails these days. And then just somebody who honestly just takes the time to put together a well-crafted message, pulling things from maybe a LinkedIn profile or something that calls out the unique thing about my background or myself that they were able to pick up on.
Interesting. You know, that's all great stuff. Want to pivot a little bit and talk about, I guess, your career specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what helped you in your career? You know, a lot of SDRs, right, start initial roles. These are people who have really never had to communicate with a, you know, direct manager or direct report, right? A lot of, you know, early SDRs, I'm assuming, worked in, like, the restaurant industry, so they had a manager, but not to the same level of, like, trying to help you, right? They just want you to do your work. You know, I guess, how do you, when you're in an early role, I guess, how do you connect with someone? How do you find mentors, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you establish your career early on?
How do you establish your career? I think diving into the job that's probably harder than all of your peers.
Mm-hmm.
It's either, you know, going into, I mean, my background, a lot of the people that I know are successful right now did, you know, that really grind sales job early on, or they went into consulting, or they did the investment banking analyst route. You know, the kind of jobs that you're cranking through, like, long hours and difficult work, and maybe not the easiest place to be. I went up through the consulting route, and I think just if you're establishing yourself, I think sales is one of those is one of those roles. And so if you're an SDR, man, you think about, like, coming into a place and, like, really giving it the grind. I think that could set you up for not only a really rewarding career, but a lucrative one in the future. Now, if you're talking about mentors, how do you find them? I think naturally that you'll come across a few, you know, kind of people that you can clearly see are on their way up. Maybe not the CEO day one, but if you can find that senior manager that, you know, is taking off like a rocket ship, and you're like, that person's going to be a VP in a couple years, get to know that person. Make yourself available to that person.
What qualities do you think are these types of people?
It's
is
hard.
That, is that an impossible question?
You know, it's a little bit impossible, but I mean, they're always prepared. They're usually on point. They know they can speak extemporaneously about the main topics at hand. People respect them. You can kind of just tell they have it. You'll come across them every once in a while. Now, if you're just cultivating friendships and kind of more I guess, peer mentors, or maybe more a collegial kind of a mentor, as opposed to just trying to, you know, hitch your wagon to a star, I would say that you're going to naturally have connections with people, right? You'll have connections with bosses. You'll have connections with people that are higher in the organization than you. And just stay close, foster those, take them out to lunch, grab coffee with them. I think that kind of stuff is really important and kind of underrated.
That's all really good advice. Honestly, I wish I would have had that when I first started my career, because I was always nervous to go talk to the VP level person, you know?
No, they want it. They want you to come say hello.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not something you realize, right, when you're a you know, 22-year-old or whatever out of college. Sure, but you think, oh, man, I'm the little fish in a huge pond. I might as well stay at my desk and shut up. And in reality, that's probably you probably should not be doing any of that.
No, you shouldn't. And if you come in, you put your head down, you bust it for a couple of months, they will want to know who you are, because word will get around real fast about that new guy or new gal who's really good.
For sure.
Joel, so you mentioned some of your background coming in up from consulting ranks and different types of early career success you've seen from people in other fields. Mm-hmm. I guess to flip that on its head, how do you think that the SDR role prepares people for success in other roles outside of sales?
Sure. I think the biggest one is that it, in order to have success as an SDR, it forces that consistency. It's an achievement-oriented role. I mean, a lot of people will come in and they'll be focused on the activities that you do in a day. And that definitely has its importance, but it has its importance in that it leads you to achieving things. If you are coming in and you spend, let's say, 6 months to a year and a half, depending on different organizations, in a role that forces you to prepare, to plan ahead, to take time to craft messaging, to get good at communications, to learn the product set. I mean, there's so many things that you develop skill-wise in an SDR position that sets you up. And typically that's for sales. And so, you know, organization, preparation, communications are super important. But then those are transferable skills to almost anything. I mean, I think that, you know, what job in this world doesn't require or wouldn't be better done if it had somebody in it that was super prepared and able to communicate well?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I got one last question for you, Joel.
Sure.
And it's sort of a silly one, I guess, now. But, you know, do you have a quote you live by? You have anything like that? I know I have those personally, but I was wondering.
There's a couple. So I've always liked Per Aspera ad Astra. Through the thorns to the stars. I think it's Shakespeare, maybe even, or some philosopher or something. I don't know where it comes from, you can tell. But okay. I've always really liked that one. I sort of feel like coming up through the school of hard knocks is, I don't know if it's a chip on the shoulder kind of thing, but it really keeps you motivated. Just knowing that, you know, where you're going is a great place, but sometimes it's hard to get there. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is John Wooden. It's don't confuse activity for achievement. I think people in this job, SDRs, you're judged on activity too. But if you keep your eye on the prize of, like, I need to set meetings, or I have to generate X pipeline, or whatever your particular KPIs are, focus on that stuff, and whatever it does or whatever it takes to get you there activity-wise is what you need to do. But you're not here to make phone calls. You're here to set appointments and generate pipeline, and just keep your eye on that. It'll help you streamline things.
Sure. Awesome. That's all great advice, Joel. You know, thanks. Ben, you got any more questions before
we go? No, I think this was terrific. We really appreciate you joining us on the show. Hope you listeners out there got some good tips and feedbacks and advice for starting your career in sales and beyond.
Yeah, and I echo all that. Thanks for listening. Call it a day there.
Cool. Awesome.
Nice.
That was great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. I always re-record. It's whatever. Yeah. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Arrested Sales Development. This is Ben Tannenbaum.
This is Max Emmerman.
And today we're going to go into the nuts and bolts of email prospecting. I know this is a big part of both of our cadences, so let's just start off with Max. Mm-hmm. When you're first drafting up a email that you're sending to a prospect, how do you just approach that?
Yeah, so for me, I'm really all about it first, doing the personalized approach. You know, I think it really depends on what you're selling and what, like, the kind of, like, right, I guess, volume of your product is, right? So if you're selling, you know, $200 items or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. to consumers is obviously very different. But for, you know, this B2B kind of talk with higher expensive, you know, software solutions, you know, I really think the personalized approach to the email versus the mass, like, are you interested in this email?
Right.
Personalized much better. That being said, I have a great example I want to share. And I think it sort of breaks into the sort of essence of what we're going to get at throughout this whole episode, right?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, you know, I went to camp in Hayward, Wisconsin, like a summer camp for boys. We had a trip to Quetico National Park at one point where we stayed there for 10 days. So I know all about this park. Besides all of that, I had a prospect who his office is about 10 miles from that park. So what I did was I actually randomly got sent a photo of myself in that park. Anyways, took that photo, sent it to him and said, hey, I love Quetico National Park, you know. I think the Canadian National Park Service is a great thing. And then I said, you know, I hope you guys do too. Because, you know, you're, whatever, 10 minutes from the park. You know, I'm sure they're familiar with it. It's famous, sure. All that kind of stuff. You know, he got back to me in 20 minutes. Like, hey, Max, like, I'm not interested in the solution. However, I love Quetico National Park, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's not great that I'm not going to make any money or set the meeting off that. However, that got a response pretty fast, right? And it's because I hit something in that guy's heart, head, mind, however you want to say it, where he was like, oh, Max gets it. Like, he was here. We somehow have a connection to this person, right? And you can do that in a multitude of ways. It doesn't have to be so personal like that. You know, that's really that specific sort of almost lucky example.
Yeah.
Right?
I really like that for two reasons. First of all, it does stand out. It shows that you're a real person. It's not automated. It's not, I was a name on a list, right?
Exactly.
It's real. You did your homework. You did your research. I actually like another example that we were sort of talking about before the show that you did a great job with, which is, it's one thing to be relevant and something like, oh, cool national park, or hey, you're based in Boston, congrats on the Patriots winning again, you know, something like that. And that's great, but what I think is even more impactful customization is mentioning something about that company.
And
an example I thought you did a really good job with, there you were reaching out to an electronics company, and you happen to use one of their products, one of their new products that just came out, super cool, super niche, and you, that was the first time in your email. Hey, I'm a bit, just bought product X, loved it, it's great. And that's relevant to their business, right? So it's not just customized, it's not just
Yeah, and to add on to that thought too, you know, so this product is a camera, not to get into the company and all that, but it was a camera. I was reaching out to their CMO, and you know, I said I've been using this camera for 10 years, like I'm really looking at the new film, but I can't find the specific type of film, all that, right? You know, the CMO was the lady, she reached out to me and she goes, Max, like, thanks so much for the outreach. Like, I have this type of camera too. Here's, you can buy the film. You know, she was located in New York. We're in Chicago. But, you know, she was like, whatever. There's a store here. You can get it. That was, like, the first touch, right? So she didn't really mention anything about meeting with us or being interested. However, I'm in, right? I'm in the door. She knows who I am. She knows I own one of their cameras. She knows I'm a human with a brain, right? I'm not some robot sending her marketing BS.
And how can you not? If someone's reaching out to you with specific things, not about, most sales outreach is about their company and the seller. So if you're reaching out about them and what they're interested in and how you can help with what they do and what they're trying to accomplish, that's going to set you apart.
One other, you know, I guess sort of main theme about this really is breaking through the inbox, right? So you know, these people we hit up, or as SDRs, you know, at least in our space, where we reach out to very similar contacts, right? One of them, just for sake of ease, is the chief marketing officer. That kind of person probably receives 100 emails a day.
Sure.
And 99 of them, they don't want to talk to, right?
Right.
You're most likely in that 99 just to start. So if you can't break through and personalize, or at least give them a reason to say, hey, I should open this email and at least peruse it, what are you doing, right?
Right.
You got to get to that point. So there's ways to do that, right? So the personalization is one. You know, pointing to their products is another one. Google News searching has been really helpful for me, if you do it in the right way. So what I mean by that is, don't go find the first article that pops up and say, hey, check it out. Super cool article about you guys.
Right.
Read it. But maybe go LinkedIn search where that person went to college. Go find an article about, you know, some dorm getting torn down, right? And be like, I'm sure you had a bunch of memories in there. You know, I had a friend who went there and he was so sad to see it go. And then transition, be like, anyways, you know, we're not in college anymore. how about you check out or whatever, you know, you can figure out your way to transition that. But that's really how you get them to go, why is this person texting me about my dorm or the cafeteria food or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Because then they open their email and they go, oh, this is really actually creative and this person put work into trying to meet with me. Maybe it is worth a 15-minute meeting with me, or even an email back saying thank you.
If anyone took away burrito night at Foster Walker dorm Monday nights in Northwestern, I would be vivid. So I take that meeting for sure. But another way, talking about breaking through that inbox, I find pretty effective is visuals and images. Like you said, these people, they get so many emails.
Mm.
It's tough to read. Even if you're doing your job and you're keeping it short, it's tough to read that much.
That's a big one.
So if you have an image that stands out, it's different and it's easier to digest. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a little chart that your marketing team put together with some ROI, or we're both lucky that our product at the company we work for is a pretty visual product that you can see on client websites. So it's easy for us, and I bet a lot of you out there too, it's easy to get a screenshot of what your product does and show it to them. That it's not going to tell the whole story. It's not going to close the deal, but that's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to pique their interest.
Yep.
And they see an interesting graphic, an interesting image that piques their interest, hopefully helps book a meeting.
And the other thing to speak to that point as well, you know, generally speaking, we're not booking meetings in that first touch, right?
Right.
So one, that first touch really might just be designed, hey, have them see the company's logo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because then the next time you email them, you're going to include that logo in it, right? They're going to see it in your email header or footer, right? Like, that could be a huge thing when you're on your fifth touch and they see your logo and they remember your name. Maybe that's why they end up sending you that email, right? Because who really knows why? We don't know, right? It's sort of a psychological thing. Yeah. However, it's always little things that add up, or at least we think they add up.
Yeah. No, I think it does add up. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. So let's get to that point about the
little things.
The fact that you're not going to book a meeting in that first email.
For sure.
People get so many emails from sales reps with the, just following up on my last email. And I don't think that's effective at all.
Oh, it's the worst.
Right?
Yeah. I've got them and they're off. It's like, why?
Right. So what do you do to keep fresh and make sure that, let's say you're trying to have 6, 7, 8 email touch campaign. How do you keep that content fresh? How do you keep more juice in the pipeline?
I think the easiest and probably most obvious way is talk about your different products, right?
Mm-hmm.
So luckily we work for a company that sells multiple different items or products, services, however you want to call them, right? So your first email is going to highlight one thing that is extremely, you know, could be extremely productive for the company, right? Let's say, or I don't even have to answer it, right? Let's say that next email, right, might be the personalization email, where you're not really talking about the company or the products, but you're talking about something that they're going to read. Third one might be another product they could benefit from, right? And so on and so forth.
Right.
So it's really about mixing up and diversifying. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
So yeah, diversifying those emails, you know?
I totally agree. I'm on the same page. Mm-hmm. One other touch that I've liked using is just like the article share touch, which is like, hey, thought you'd be interested in this article about how I don't want to go into the specifics, but let's say how we saw a lot of e-commerce people. So, and how e-commerce in the footwear space is growing dramatically.
Yep.
And then we can help you with that initiative. Or we can help you keep up with your peers in the space or grow with this trend that highlighted in the article. How does X time work for you to talk? And that does a couple things. First of all, it's sort of a soft touch, in the sense that I'm not pushing down my company, buy. I'm sharing something that's probably interesting to them. Secondly, it's adding value, because again, they're reading something, they'll probably learn something from that article.
Mm-hmm.
And third, it plants a seed in their head. Hey, this is if it's a good article, this is a trend that other people are doing. Maybe I should talk to these people because they would help me keep up with this trend or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's another way I found to avoid the, did you see the last email that you haven't responded to?
Yeah. And I guess, you know, just because we're running out of time here to wrap it up, there's a few more points I want to make, right? I think one that we haven't talked about yet is subject lines for sentences.
Mm-hmm.
That I think we should talk about sort of spam and sort of in that as well, right?
You know, we could probably do a whole episode on subject lines. We probably could. Yeah.
We'll keep it sort of short.
Yeah.
But, you know, subject lines are very easy to come off as someone who's spamming someone else, right? We all get those emails from sending us lists of things or whatever it is. you got to make sure that you're coming across the human being. Mm-hmm. If you've done the rest of your emailing right, meaning you've personalized it, you've added some kind of, like personal comment or some mention of their college, whatever it is. If you've done that, hopefully you've done enough. Yet the subject line can still throw them off, right? Because the first thing you see with an email is the subject.
Yeah.
You know, so if you write as your subject, you're interested in buying a product, like, I'm not emailing you back.
I know we're trying to keep this tight, but just quickly, do you have a subject line that is like a go-to for you?
Not really. I like to use them as they come in. So I'll give you one for like the camera one, right?
Yeah.
I use some cliche about cameras.
Okay.
Like I said, like, you know what? Honestly, I forgot what it was. Yeah. It was something about the flash or something. But I made like some like joke about it, right?
Yeah.
I was trying to do there. I was trying to make sure that like, you know, this person's going to read this and be, hey, there's no way some automated system could have ever come up with a subject line. That was my thinking, right? But you know, there's obviously other strategies as well.
Yeah. My two...
just being down to the point can always work as well.
Right. I think two subject line tricks that I found effective, at least in terms of getting the open, because that's the point of the subject line, is to get the open.
Yeah.
And then let the body do the work. So one is just one word subject lines. I've read studies online that those are typically pretty stand out and get high click-through rate.
Interesting.
So if you just have figure out what's relevant to your company, what's the core of what your company does, put it in one word subject line, that increases the open rate. Secondly, a book, the Sales Acceleration Formula. The Mark Robert, the author, has the theory. If you put company name plus school name, everybody's going to open that, right? If you got an email, Max, our company name plus Tulane, wouldn't you open that?
100%.
Yeah.
And exactly. Replying, unless it's spam. Yeah.
Yeah, right, for sure. So I think those are two little email subject line tricks.
Yeah. And then I think the last thing we should end on is that first sentence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we discussed this a little bit, but not to the full extent. You know, obviously a lot of our prospects are viewing our emails both on phone and computer. So it's really important to make sure that your first sentence is tight, meaning that if someone opens it on the phone, it's not going to like scroll their whole screen, right? Because if you're lucky enough that someone is, you know, on their train back from work and they open your email in their inbox, if you have a first sentence or a subject line or something that is like filling their screen, most likely not reading it, right? They're going to go, oh, what is this? It's not mandated. I don't have to do it. I'm going home, whatever, you know? And I've had that happen to me, and so that's from personal experience.
100%.
So definitely keeping that first sentence short is a... And short and to the point, excuse me, is definitely very important.
Right.
But yeah, I think, honestly, we covered what we were trying to cover, right?
Yeah.
So any last comments?
No, I think to just summarize. So the last big picture conclusions are emails are going to be super important. Make sure your email line is customized, customized, customized. We can't stress that enough. Put some thought into a really good subject line. Keep it short and stay persistent on the cadence.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thanks for listening, and have a great afternoon.
Cool.
Let's do it quick.
All right, so three, two, one.
Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Arrested Sales Development, alongside Max Emmerman.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
This is Ben Tannenbaum. Today's topic is going to be a little bit of a grab bag topic, I guess, sort of what else is out there. So we've done email prospecting, we've done phone prospecting. That's really the meat and potatoes.
For sure.
But we'll go into some of the little side dishes, the couscous and the crazy wonky stuff that you can get. So I think what we'll focus on today is LinkedIn Sales Navigator, video prospecting, and then the really arcane stuff like texting or door-to-door, and does that have any value? But to kick things off with LinkedIn Sales Navigator, Max, how have you used that in your prospecting?
Yeah, so like I said, actually, we were talking about this right before we started recording. But, you know, I personally haven't seen as much luck with, like, the in-mail system from Navigator. However, I do use other parts of Nav. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're unfamiliar with Navigator, it's basically LinkedIn's version of, like, a sales prospecting tool. So, you know, everybody on LinkedIn is already on LinkedIn Navigator, right? Same platform. You can basically go on there and, you know, search people by city, by country, by job level, by name, whatever it is, right? It's really like a glorified, almost like librarian's, like, almost guide to the sales world, and or maybe like the, you know, C-level world, so to speak. You know, the way we use it at work is to identify contacts and then message contacts. However, you know, my findings from that is really I've had a lot of success in finding contacts, not as much in the messaging space. So, you know, The reason I don't think that messaging works as well in there is only because a lot of these people who are on LinkedIn, right, they're not looking to communicate for their own, like, or for their current job, you know, through that platform, right? They expect an email or a phone call, right? They're not looking to LinkedIn. They're looking to LinkedIn for career stuff. However, with that being said, it can be a really great place to, one, develop your own career, but two, you know, in your prospecting efforts, let's say you don't send some kind of message on LinkedIn, you end up, you know, liking their comments, that's totally okay. So I guess, Ben, like, how do you use LinkedIn Messenger most, right?
Yeah, Max, I think you touched on a lot of
great stuff. Yeah, sorry, I went over.
No, I think that was really good. I didn't want to chime in. Because I think that you're an SDR listening to this podcast. You get a ton of recruiting sales pitches on LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. Most of which stink. I think a lot of the stuff we get on LinkedIn Sales Navigator, mm-hmm. it's probably worse than email sales even.
Mm-hmm.
These long, crazy things, clearly
yeah,
no customers.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I agree. I think that cheapens and makes it harder to break through because you see LinkedIn Sales mm-hmm. Navigator and you're like, ew.
Yeah, and it's sort of funny. I was just thinking about this now. The opposite almost is, you know, I recently like put on my LinkedIn like open to learning more opportunities or networking or whatever it was, right?
Uh-huh.
And you know, that has been interesting just because you learn and meet a lot of people, but some of these people, you know, they come in the proper way, they message you on LinkedIn. Others go find your stuff and they message your work email. It's very interesting. It's almost the opposite, right? Like I don't want that. I don't want my career advice or my career, you know, discussion over my work email, right? I want my career discussion over LinkedIn. I want my work over my work email.
Right.
So it's sort of the opposite tone, and like that's the reason I say I don't think it works so well, because I've had that experience from the recruiting side, right? Which is basically sales, but people, not things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These recruiters messaging me at work, and I'm like, I don't want this on my work. Right. You know, I want this in my LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. That said, I do think LinkedIn Sales Navigator it's an invaluable tool for SDRs. Mm-hmm. So you can't do the job without it for two reasons. One, what you were talking about with the research component, finding accurate contacts is just, you have to use it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a no-brainer. That's table stakes. We don't need to spend any time on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think secondly, though, where you were talking about with likes and sharing articles and things, when you put into your saved leads on Sales Navigator
mm-hmm.
and it shows up as this prospect that you've been reaching out to or want to reach out to just shared an article, you can like that.
Yeah.
And then they see, oh, Max Emmerman like my stuff. People like that when you post on LinkedIn, you always check who's liking it, who's engaging
for sure.
with your content,
and you can see who's viewing the profile and all that.
Right.
I actually have a great story about this. So my buddy Harry actually was working as an SDR at a fintech startup. Didn't really like his job so much, but didn't know how to leave his job. So what ended up happening was for the last 2 years, you know, he's been basically commenting and liking all of the CRO for a. Oh, I'm blanking on the company. They're like basically a packaging company. But he's been liking everything the CRO says, you know, messaging the CEO on LinkedIn, you know, doing all this career stuff on LinkedIn. So 2 years go by. He's trying to leave work or where he works now. And the CRO hits him up and goes, hey, you know, you've been super active on LinkedIn. You're clearly interested in our company and sales. How, you know, this is the one time I'm going to say it, but how would you like to come in for an interview? He was employed in 2 weeks. Flew out to LA, had the interview.
That's really cool.
Like, and that's only because he kept that persistence up. So, yeah. You know, this company was one that, I think they had 600% revenue growth in their first 2 years, which is like out of control.
Yeah.
You know, they have a lot of candidates, right? Yeah, they went to him because he had been messaging them and liking their whatever and
right.
commenting on whatever, you know, for 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, he was dedicated and it paid off. And I'm not saying go spend 3 hours on LinkedIn every single day. But, like,
yeah.
you know, that kind of commitment, I guess, can pay off in some scenarios.
Right. And so soft touches, too.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our touches as an SDR is the hard touch. It's you're adding value and you're doing all the right things.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it is take this meeting. You're asking. If you can touch and interact with your prospects without asking for anything, in fact, when you're helping them and promoting their content and stuff that they took the time to share, that goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
All right. I don't think we want to totally diminish the in-mail either. I know both Max and I, it sounds like
it's hit or miss, really.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
And I think it's more miss. I agree. Just,
yeah.
again, because so much of what's out there is pretty bad.
What I will say is it's not as hit or miss as the video prospecting.
Okay.
Which is, like,
yeah.
by far the most hit or miss. So moving that a little bit, Ben, have you had much experience? Because I've had a little bit.
I have not. By the time we started... no, I just really haven't. So
cool.
I'd like to hear your take first.
Yeah, for sure. I had a very interesting experience with video prospecting, which is my team received a video from some, I don't even remember, some company, you know, mm-hmm. trying to sell us something. And it was a minute and a half of this sort of like 22, 23 year old guy, you know, standing in like sort of like a wrinkly button down shirt with like a half thrown together tie.
And sounds just, like me. Some stubby dude with a wrinkly shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. he was just like rambling on though. Like he never stopped. And I like, honestly, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know what the heck he was even selling us or pitching us. And like after about 30 seconds, and then keep in mind the video was like a minute and a half, it's we all deleted it and we're like, we're done. So like that was a pretty crappy effort on that guy's part, right? However, after that, we got into these talks about can video prospecting be useful? Could we use it as a tool at our workplace? And then, you know, we took some meetings with all these different companies that mm-hmm. basically have this software installed or they integrate onto your site, not onto your everything. I found it really interesting from the perspective of this can either be like the greatest thing that ever happens to companies or it can also be just crap and a total waste of your money and time. What I mean by that is companies, for example, like recruiters, it can be a great tool. They're already trying to get into your face. They can send you a 10-second message of what they're trying to say. It can be a great tool.
Right.
However, for companies like, you know, I don't even know, whatever, a tech startup or some kind of product sales-oriented mm-hmm. company, it can be really disadvantageous. You know, there's no sets of best practices here. So, you know, mm-hmm. let's say you're a sales executive who only has a list of 40 companies in their you know, pipeline, so to speak. If you have that, like you're, you know, let's say you hit 38 of those companies up with video prospecting tools, you might do a really good job, and they might be like, oh, this is amazing. On the other end, they're like, this is the most annoying video. Now we have his face. We're never talking to him.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful with that. And I'll give you, like, the, you know, that guy who basically hit up our company. Like, if he tries to come pitch us again, we're going to know exactly who he is. And, like, I'm going to tell him, be like, this was, like, an awful prospecting tool. Like, why would I want to keep taking another meeting from you? Like, your first touch was terrible.
Yeah. So that's, I feel like, the tough balance there. Mm-hmm. Like, you obviously can't do a whole cadence on video or shouldn't. I could see it where you are using it for like, you have maybe your tier one, your gold star, the mm-hmm. one, this is the logo that you want to book and it's your dream prospect. And you've reached out to them, you know it's a real person, you know you're getting maybe their direct line so they can hear your voicemails. You know the emails are going through because they're opening them.
Mm-hmm.
And you think you're close. You think it's a really good fit. And then you have some customized, really well done, really solid video.
Mm-hmm.
Not using the person's name, using the person's more customized information.
Yeah, I got you.
Not just the same video that you're sending out to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it like that and it's produced well and the sound's good and you don't look like a creep, I can see.
What I will say, though, to that extent, right, like, what you just listed was a lot of stuff to make it,
right.
or whatever, things, stuff to make it go right. You
right.
know? With that being said, there's also not really a best practice established in this whole video prospecting type of outreach. So, like, you could put up a list of 15 bullet points that you want to do in your video.
Mm-hmm.
You can have your video tailored to being perfect what you think it is,
yeah.
and it could still really anger someone on the other end.
Right.
Because there's no best practice, right? Like, you know, in our email prospecting, it's like, you know, short little quip, value ask, you know, short email.
Right.
Name, number, whatever, that's it. Like everyone sort of knows there's like a few bullet points that go along with email or phone prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about these on the show.
Yeah.
This video is a whole different world. Like you have no idea what people are going to react
right.
to. And that's what also scared me so much about it.
Yeah.
Was like, you know, I saw that the one guy who sent us a video, I saw it and was like, this is awful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people next to me were like, it's not so good, but it's not so bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge range though.
Right.
I was like, this is the worst outreach I've seen in a year.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
So it affects people differently.
Do you think it breaks through in the sense of you're at least going to get the click more so than on a regular email? Or are
Depends
people going
to
watch?
Depends who you're sending it to.
Okay.
For example, like me and the team at that point had a lot of time to kill. You know,
mm-hmm.
so we watched the
right.
minute and a half video or whatever it was.
Sure, and we're SDRs, we're interested
yeah.
in seeing other prospects.
Exactly. I mean, you send it to a VP of sales who has 2 minutes free every day.
Mm.
I don't know why he'd watch a minute video from some random person, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to reading an email that takes him 15 seconds.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I think we got to wait some time on this. I think anyone who's trying to sell you video prospecting tools is sort of messing with you a little bit, only because none of this is, like, established.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a double-edged sword, though, and then we'll move on from video in a second. But
mm-hmm.
like you're saying, on the one hand right now, it's sort of this new cutting-edge thing that no one knows how to use. At the same time, part of its appeal is that stands out and no one else is doing it. You get a million emails, none of them, one of them has a video.
I agree.
At some point, though, once we establish the rules and everything, the videos are going to get better, but it's going to get oversaturated.
That's going to make it obsolete.
And everybody does the video. So it's, I guess it's a little catch-22.
Oh, yeah, and then one thought to leave you on the video, too. I was thinking about this while, you know, writing notes for the podcast today.
Yeah.
Do you think, I'll pose a question to you. You think, like, the next cool or not, that's a bad word, the next innovative or disrupting kind of factor in outreach for SDRs? See, I think it could be old apps. And let me
explain. Okay, what do you mean by that?
So I mean, like, Vine, like, TikTok, like, that kind of stuff. Can you imagine you send a 6-second Vine about your company that was, like, hilarious, that if you could make that be creative, you know, send that to a prospect? Right. If I got that, I'd be pretty pumped. If I saw a TikTok video, I don't know how you'd even do it for your work. But if you could make that interactive and creative and send that out, that could be, like, a really cool prospecting tool. And it's also free.
That's really interesting. On TikTok, even, we're so behind. And this is a tangent, but I feel like TikTok's just starting to get big in the United States. In China, like, people love TikTok, and they're obsessed with it. Here, no one...
teaching abroad, every single kid abroad had one on their phone.
Right, it's nuts.
But I don't know, that's what I was thinking. We'll keep moving on here.
Yeah, just one last little thought before we sort of wrap the show up. Can we just touch quickly on some of the things that we've never used, and I bet most of you've never used,
like text and SMS.
Would you text a prospect?
I can't imagine that going well. Yeah. And the only reason I say it is because, you know, in our sales force, right, we have some prospect cell phone numbers. Every once in a while, if I have something urgent I need to do, I'll hit someone up on their cell phone and call them.
Yeah.
Like 95% of the time you do that, someone's pissed on the other end of the phone, right? Like, why are you calling my cell phone? You have my work number. Don't call this number. Like, you're not going to send him a text being like, hi, this is Max from, you know, the company. Like, would you, like, take a fit? They're going to be like, F off. Like, get off my phone.
Right.
Because like, I'd probably do the same thing. I'd be like, dude, I have a work email. Like, I
would be vivid.
Can you imagine you get a text on Sunday night saying, hi, like, I know you have probably a busy week, but you want to set a meeting or whatever? Like, that would piss me off.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, I can't imagine ever sending a text. I don't think I ever will, personally.
So I've booked meetings on the phone with the cell phone.
Okay.
And when they put that in their, say, in their out-of-office reply or their email signature, fair game. Go after their
phone. Yeah, I agree.
If they're giving it to you, go for it.
But I'm not saying text their cell phone.
Exactly.
I'm saying you can call their cell phone, leave a voicemail, fine.
100%.
You can't spam on a text.
Yeah, the text is different. And I think the text is hard, too, because it's much harder to really add value.
Oh, yeah.
You can't have a client example. You can't have it. You could have an image.
No, it would be really hard to go.
Good.
That'd be super above and beyond if you had all that. And that'd be really hard to do.
Right. At the same time, people read their text messages. I saw somebody posted some time about this, and they were like, a CEO of a company, maybe if it's an important email, they'll get to it within 24 hours at the most.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a text message, they're going to get to it within an hour at the most.
Yeah.
Even the CEO doesn't miss text messages. People miss emails. They don't miss text messages. So they'll see it. You know they're going to see it.
That doesn't surprise me. And I think the way the world's going, we're probably going to be SMS prospecting in 15 years if this is still a real thing. You know. But like, to an extent, like at this point in time, it just feels so... One, it feels a little bit phony.
Yeah.
But two, it just feels wrong.
Right.
You know, like
invasive.
Imagine, think about people dating, right? Now we have dating apps, and then after you go on a first date, you get like a number of a girl or guy, whatever, right? Like, so if you think about this from like that lens, right? Like, think about like a whatever VP of sales at another company. Like, you haven't had that original discussion, so how can you ask them for their phone number?
Right.
It's like asking for the number before you meet them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the greatest analogy.
No, I get that. Yeah, it definitely seems a little too forward and a little bit just...
Yeah.
I think you would definitely, right or wrong, rub people the wrong way more than you help.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our official vote from the rest of the sales development
on
text prospecting is going to be a no-bueno.
Yeah, I think we're a thumbs down on that one.
Yeah.
And then last point of prospecting we had was, does door-to-door sales or prospecting still exist? I have my answer. I don't know. I'll let you go first, though.
Yeah. So my answer is I know there's like some element of that that's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think it could play in a traditional new age traditional like tech, B2B, SaaS, SDR role, like most of you listening out there probably are, is basically as the exclamation point for your dream prospect. So again, sort of like what we said with video, if it's someone that you know is engaged,
yeah.
It's sometimes people say write a letter, a handwritten note, and that gets people's attention, and I like that. But if you have the opportunity, if that dream prospect of yours that's sort of engaging with your outreach is in your city and you can, just knock on the door. And it's not a cold coming in with your bag of goods and showing them your stuff, but it's I was wondering if Jennifer's in today. We'd exchanged some emails in the past.
Can or go get some like local food or drink. You know, go to Starbucks and get them a coffee. Like,
right.
You can spend $10 and make a huge difference to someone's day. You really can.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying do that every time, but yeah, I want to agree with you. For those pointed leads or prospects you have, right, that you know they're conversing with you, they're open to something, right? You're just trying to like sort of reel them in, right? You're almost at the end of the line. Go do that little thing, right? Because that one above and beyond step, like maybe they have no money to buy your software, whatever the heck you're selling, right?
Right.
But you might go buy them a coffee. They might be interested to learn more about your company.
Yeah.
And who knows what that does 2 years down the road, right?
And they'll appreciate that. Like, I think that's, again, we always talk about adding value, and you're probably not going to add value there, but they admire the chutzpah, and the sort of the a man that took guts to like, they really showed up to my office. They really, it wasn't just some like canned email response they sent out. Like, good for them.
I 100% agree with everything you said, excuse me. So, I think we ran through it there. We had a lot of tangents, little random thoughts. We might have to do one on the modern apps.
Modern apps in prospecting. They could be a whole
new
world.
Yeah, I might start prospecting through dating apps now, so we'll see. We'll try to find some CMOs on Bumble or something.
This is a sales podcast, not an HR podcast, so we actually get away with that.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
exactly.
Thank you for your time. We really appreciate you listening to us, and have a great rest of your day.
Have a good one.
Cool.
We're on 3, 2. Hi, this is Max.
And this is Ben Tannenbaum.
Yeah, this is our 8th episode of the Arrested Sales Development Pod. Happy to bring this one to you for sure. The topic of episode 8 is going to be prospecting big versus prospecting small companies. So with that said, we're going to try to sort of orient this to talk about the 3 different messaging systems we use to actually prospect. So email, phone, and then LinkedIn are really the big 3. But then, I'll let Ben take over here. So Ben, with email prospecting, what do you find with big companies? You know, you're getting through over email. How's that working out so far?
Sure. So I think it's different. I guess the difference for email on big or small companies would, in my mind, be just the number of people that you have. And but that's the big difference to me, which means I think you can sort of get away with sending very similar messaging to more people there, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? At a smaller company, I'm thinking, let's say you were prospecting into an SDR team, not that we are, but let's say you were.
Yeah.
Right? If it's a really small company and you know, hey, they have 3 SDRs and they're sitting right next to each other, I can't send that same email to those same people.
Oh, yeah, open and left.
Right, exactly. But at a bigger company, maybe you're reaching out to somebody in the marketing department and then somebody in the merchandising department, somebody in the e-commerce department, I'm making things up, that they might not even know each other, much less know that you sent all 3 of those people an email. So I think that's the biggest difference in emailing big or small companies. What's your take?
No, I agree with you. It's funny, while you were sort of talking about that, I was just in my head like thinking about mail merging.
Yeah.
Only because like, we get those emails all the time, right? We'd like to sell you this list, and it's the same person every time. It's the same email. Did you see my last email? Please advise, or whatever. Okay. Like,
Which is awful.
Obviously those are awful, right? But they remind me of things like when I email prospect big companies, I'm really careful to try like not to do that.
Right.
But also, I'm still using the same method. So let me explain. Like, what I'll do if I'm reaching out to like, 3 different e-commerce VPs at 3 different or similar brands, right? So if it's like 3 electronics companies, I'll use the same template for messaging different companies, and then I'll try to make it personalized for each email. But the general like meat and potatoes in there are still the same. I don't know if I explained that clearly enough.
I think that's a good point. To what you're saying too about the general, just like it's not a mail merge, but if you email info@google.com, probably not gonna get a response.
Yeah, you're not getting anything.
So some though, if you're reaching out to some small D2C company, the info@email address actually could be okay.
For
You, it's certainly somebody real is manning it, and I've gotten responses to yep. that. So that's another difference, I think, on email between big and small.
Yeah, I would agree.
What about the phone, Max? Do you think when you're calling smaller companies versus bigger companies, do you think either one stands out as having a higher connect rate to like getting a hold of a real person?
I think the phone just works so well at small companies. Yeah. But to be honest, like it can work good at big companies. I just think it works so much better at small ones because I'm someone who likes to speak and I like to talk.
Right.
And I find that if I'm on the phone, or even better, if I'm on some kind of video, if you can do that, which is hard to mm-hmm. start off a call, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a second call. Like, right. just having some kind of visualization or just a voice, like, I can usually make friends when I speak to. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when I get these gatekeepers, I'm able to find something in common, like something that we both have in common, right? So maybe this receptionist, or it is, right? Maybe they're, I don't know, going to their grandkid's birthday party or something, right? Like, I'll be able to figure that out. We'll talk about it for a minute. I'm like, yeah, it's probably a waste of my time to waste 2 minutes with every gatekeeper. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes the only way to get through with these small companies,
right?
And if you can please them, even if they want you through, you know, I bet 50% of the time they go back to their boss and they go, I just spoke to this lovely boy named Max at Power Views, right, or whatever the hell they're saying about me. And
I don't think they're saying that.
Maybe not that. That was a little weird. But yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Like, whatever. Maybe they're saying, you know, I spoke with this guy at a reviews company. He thinks we could help. He was super nice. Like, maybe it's worth sending him an email.
Sure.
Man, you know, because like, you never know it works. Like, if you went on the phone and you're like, hi, this is Max. I'd like to sell you our software, whatever. This, they're going to either one, hang up on you, or two, they're not letting you through, right?
Right.
So you got to start with that soft touch.
Yeah.
But in the big companies are a little different, right? So, like, you can try to do that, but I bet they get that all day. Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you go calling into, like, I don't know, you call into Walmart, right? You're super nice, you're trying to get some e-commerce VP there or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, no way. Come on. Like, if they don't know your name, they're not letting you through.
Yeah. And I think, I actually think it's mixed on that. We talked, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole
because
we had the whole episode on gatekeepers a while back, mm-hmm. which is still in the feed if you want to listen to it. but with the smaller companies, it likely is going to be that same receptionist every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to butter him up or her up, and every time you call, making that personal connection is great. At a huge company, if I dial in and I'm not getting, and I don't have a direct line,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get a different person every single time you call.
That's a really good point.
So it doesn't really matter. Not that you don't want to be nice to them, you should be nice to everyone, but the personal connection isn't going to help you book the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes at these big companies, if you don't have the direct extension or a dial by name,
you're either just
not getting through. They'll say no, or they'll just say yes. They're fielding calls today. Sure, I'll pass you through. And who knows where it goes.
I think the point you made earlier about having only one like receptionist or mm-hmm. assistant or whatever it is, right, for like a group of people at a smaller company,
mm-hmm.
it's so spot on.
Right.
When I first started doing this SDR stuff, like I was calling into companies that were small, and what I realized was if I called one contact and got the same assistant, generally speaking, that first time I contacted them, so we hadn't met each other or talked yet,
mm-hmm.
they were super nice. I usually wasn't getting through, but at least get put to a voicemail maybe, right? The second time, once they hear, hi, this is Max calling, they're like, wait, didn't I just speak to you? And I'm like, yeah, but I need to speak to another person. That's when it's sort of like, ah, crap. Like, they're not going through because they know I'm about to call six more times, six more voicemails.
100%.
So that's when you got to be careful, for sure.
That's why at a big company, I love when they have the dial by name.
Yeah,
and you nice. And you can actually get, say, 6-7 people's like direct extension voicemails or direct extension real line. When that happens, that's gold.
I like when they have good music personally. You ever sit on those lines for so long?
Yep.
So then lastly, maybe we should move to like LinkedIn messaging a little bit.
Yeah.
To be totally honest with you, I don't have that much experience with the LinkedIn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is that out of the sort of limited experience I have had, what's been really useful for me is just sending like short but concise messages, which is, I guess, makes sense, obviously.
Yeah.
But maybe even shorter than email. Just being like, you know, hey, John, tried to email you. Not sure if you got it. Maybe not starting with that. But like, hey, John, sent you an email earlier from Power Reviews. You know, we'd love to talk to you for 10 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. you get any time today, give me a call.
Right.
You got it 15 minutes on Tuesday, whatever, right? Like,
those
can be really easy. But like, I think if you overdo it on LinkedIn, people are just like, I don't really want to deal with this. Like, I think it's sort of seen as like, obviously, it's a workplace and professional sort of space. But like, on the other end, like, you can be LinkedIn on your phone at home in bed, right? So you got to be sort of careful when you're using it, right?
Right. The way I was thinking of the differences between the big and small companies is
mm-hmm.
at a big company, again, let's pull Apple or something. You
mm-hmm.
can find so many contacts at Apple, right? Mm-hmm. But at a small company, you might do your sales navigator LinkedIn search and you find the CEO,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe that's it. Or maybe there's four people that you find.
Yeah.
And that tells you, A, that's good because it tells you something about the company, but it also, it's much harder to filter on LinkedIn, on these smaller companies. Whereas at a big company, if you're looking for, our ideal client profile is the user who's going to be a vice president of X and Y department or something, mm-hmm. you can find that and you can filter and do that all day. At a small company, you just can't. It's not out there. They're too small.
Yeah. I agree with everything you said.
Sure. Well, so I guess to wrap things up, Max, what's your favorite hold music when you're on hold?
Favorite hold music?
Yeah. Do you like rock? Do you like something upbeat? Or do you like just like calm, classical, so you can get all the work done while you're waiting?
This is so embarrassing, but honestly, I like the elevator music because I end up taking... Okay. So usually when I call, I have one AirPod in, I'm listening to something. If I actually get on someone on the phone or get a ring, I take it out immediately so I can obviously pay attention, right?
Yeah.
So what I end up doing is when I take it out and I have elevator music, I end up like hitting my earpiece against the table like a drum. I end up drumming along to the elevator music because it never has drums. So like,
that's awesome.
I know how lame that sounds, but like on the other end, it's just like something to pass the time. And I listen to music anyways at work. So
that's
like,
great.
Yeah. How about you?
I agree. I don't like the super generic hold music.
Yeah.
I kind of like it to be real music that they happen to be playing on hold. So it's like something sort of upbeat or something classical.
I like that.
Yeah.
There was, I called into one company that had, oh my God, what's it called? It's a SpongeBob song. From the Sweet Victory, that's what it's called. The song that everyone wanted them to play at the Super Bowl. They had that as their voicemail or whatever it was, their little message in the hold. And like for a half second, I was like, I know this. And then I put it on speaker and I was like, it's totally the SpongeBob song.
That's fantastic. Hell
yeah.
I thought you were going, they have the SpongeBob, the actual intro song, Who Lives in a Pie. That would not be great whole music.
No. I'd throw the phone. I feel like two rounds of that, it's like, sure. I don't care anymore, I'll suck it up, I'm not getting to these people. Like that's probably the greatest gatekeeper of all time.
So speaking of not caring anymore, I'm sure our listeners probably want us to wrap this thing up. So we really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. If you stuck it out through the rest of this whole episode, we appreciate you. We appreciate your listenership and hope you book some meetings with any of this advice.
Cool.
Good stuff. I think